I believe I've mentioned this in earlier podcasts, but it took me, I think, about 18 episodes before I was really ready to devote a whole episode of Good Dog to the topic of one of the loves of my life, Farfel. And you can see his face in the logo of the Good Dog podcast. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and today we're going to be talking with our family's vet, Dr. Gary Jones of the Madera Pet Hospital in Corte Madera, California. Gary, in addition to taking care of my dogs over the years, has been kind enough to help us in two cases, first with our dog Ziggy and then with our dog Farfel, to compassionately end their lives. And anyone who's had a dog or has a dog knows that this is not an easy decision to make. And I wanted to devote a little bit of time today to talking about what's involved in that decision. So first of all, welcome, Gary.
Thank you.
I finally get to go into the inner sanctum of the Madera Pet
Yes.
Hospital after being in the examination rooms for, 15, 16, 18 years now. It's here I am back here in the office. It's great. Doctors take an oath. Certainly, people doctors take the Hippocratic Oath that they will, you know, always defend and protect life and do everything they can to preserve and prolong life. It's different for veterinarians, right?
Well, we take an oath that kind of says the same thing, and to prevent pain and suffering, too, I think is a big part of it. And the decision to end a pet's life is never easy. I don't care what the situation is, whether it happens suddenly or you have to agonize over it. It's always a difficult situation. And I think one of the main factors that we always have in the back of our mind is for the pet, you know, how much pain are they going to be in down the road, or are they going to be suffering? What's their quality of life? And also, what's the quality of the life of the pet owner has to sometimes figure into that. In situations where the pet requires so much care and time, and they're just, and the owner is just not able to do it for whatever reason, sometimes that has to be a major factor in the decision like that.
Is it always hard for you?
It's something that I've been in practice for 38 years, I guess, and it's never easy. I mean, I kind of grit my teeth when you have to do it and have to make that decision. And I don't think in many cases we try and make the decision for the owners, but I certainly think that it's our responsibility to give them our advice and our experience and what we feel is going to happen down the road potentially with that pet, and then they have to make that decision.
When it was time for us to make the decision about what to do with Farfel, I almost wanted you to give me permission or to tell me that the choice that I was making was a responsible choice as a pet owner. Is that pretty common with pet owners?
Yeah, I think it's part of our responsibility to help them, to help. We can't make the decision, but I think we can help and validate. I think it's important to validate.
How often are you euthanizing animals? I mean, is it part of every week for you?
Oh, definitely. It's
sometimes every day?
Yes. I mean, it depends on how big a practice you have and how often you're seeing animals. But at least in our practice, we are having to euthanize animals basically on a daily basis.
And it's rather humane, the methods that you use. I know, describe, if you will, I don't know if you remember specifically what happened with Farfel or if that's kind of standard in what you do in most instances.
Well, I can't say I remember specifically, but I think
I sure do.
Yeah, I know, I understand that. But I think it's a situation where you, ideally, in many situations, the owner wants it to happen at home, where that pet is in a situation where they're comfortable. Some people don't want that to happen, and sometimes you just can't that isn't a situation that's going to work. But usually, at least here, we try to have the pet as comfortable as you can in as comfortable a situation as you can. And
we usually sat on sheepskin. You gave him a sedative, right, so he was really, really relaxed and sleepy.
Right. We try and sedate the animals beforehand. And I think just about everybody now would prefer to be with their pet. Years ago, when I first entered practice, that was not the case. But
people would hand you the dog and go crying out the door?
Yes. It's different now.
And then what are the options that people are faced with as to what to do with the remains of their pet?
Well, at least here, I think in this area, if they want to, they could take the body home. They could bury it. I don't think there's restrictions as far as burying, but I think that that's a pretty difficult situation for most people to do. To take a body home and bury it in the backyard, at least in my hands, would be real difficult.
Emotionally.
Emotionally, and just I wouldn't want to do it, personally. So most of the cases, most of the remains are euthanized. They can be buried in pet cemeteries. They can be, the most common thing here is the remains are cremated. And I would say the majority of the people choose to do a private cremation where the remains are cremated and then given back to the owners in a container, a redwood urn. They can choose to not get the remains back, and it's the animal is still cremated, but it's not done as a private cremation.
Are there instances, Dr. Jones, where you really feel that the most humane course of action is to euthanize an animal and the owners just are not willing to part with their pet?
Certainly, it happens. It's a difficult situation because sometimes emotionally it just can't part, and you hate to see the animal suffer. You don't want to see an animal suffer, but I understand that sometimes it's just too hard.
Right, and are there instances where people just want more procedures, more medicine, and they're spending a fortune, and you know it's fruitless?
Happens quite often.
And what about the other extreme? Are there instances where people have had it, and for whatever reason, their dog's physical health is a problem for them or intolerable to them, and they want you to euthanize a dog, and you really don't feel that that's the responsible thing to do?
That happens too. It doesn't happen nearly as often as it used to. And I think that we've kind of changed too. I mean, when I first started, I would have to say that was not an unusual situation. But now with rescue organizations, humane organizations, and just a difference in philosophy that let's find a home, unless there's a really overriding reason, let's find a better situation.
So vets are in a position in cases like that of having to actually help people replace or rehouse their dogs?
Yeah, you make suggestions and try everything you can to do that. I think it's a more desirable situation than having to put the pet to sleep that shouldn't be put to sleep.
Right. But things have changed over the years. You think in general people have a higher consciousness around caring for their pets? And
I think definitely.
Have we taken it to an extreme? I mean, with the pet hotels and the pet spas,
well,
and
that depends.
Sexy beast clothing. And
that depends on your philosophy, I guess. But I don't think it's too extremes. There are some situations that people might consider extreme, but I think most people are pretty, they love their pets.
They enrich our lives.
People really love their pets. And you can understand why it's such a difficult situation after you've had a member of your family for years that you have to make a decision on. It is so hard, and I can't say that I have answers for people. I try and validate and try and comfort, but it's just a very difficult situation.
And let me say, though, personally, the fact that you cared so much both times, and of course I had phenomenal dogs, but I'm sure you go through this with 95% of your patients, that I really felt like you were feeling that grief right along with me, and it made a difference. It was very comforting. Since this podcast is dedicated to the memory of dear Farfel, do you remember anything about him? I mean, you see pets come and go. Any objective words about who
Farfel was a good dog. Farfel had medical problems. He had Cushing's disease that we treated for years and years. I don't know how many years.
I'm thinking 7.
Yeah, which is a long time to be treating Cushing's disease. And so because he had medical problems like that, it's a condition that they have to come in, they have to be checked, they do have secondary problems. So he got more than his share of veterinary experience. And he was a good patient. We always appreciate good patients.
He was a gentleman.
He was a gentleman. He's a real gentleman.
Not a scholar exactly, but he was definitely a gentleman.
I look more towards gentlemen than I do scholars.
Yeah. He was always happy to come. Sometimes he would shake a little bit in the lobby.
I would shake too coming into a place like this. But I appreciate the dogs that let us work on them, that I think understand that we're not trying to hurt them, but are trying to help them.
Yeah, he somehow got that message. So in waiting to see you today out in your lobby, I noticed a flyer for Betty J. Carmack, who has written a book entitled Grieving the Death of a Pet. And I thought, what a perfect way to follow up on this episode of Good Dog, but to focus on what it means to go through that loss and grief. And of course, some people, you know, in the world are sympathetic and understanding and compassionate about that loss. And other people are like, get on with it. It's just a dog.
You'll run the gamut of the emotions. And, you know, frankly, most people don't need a situation like Betty, but there are some that do. They really do. It's just so emotionally traumatic that I think getting some professional help is very beneficial, and they need it.
Gary, thank you so much for being a wonderful veterinarian all these years and for participating today in Good Dog.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Good Dog. We would love to hear from you directly, and I promise to write back to each and every one of you. Simply send an email to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.